sweat the technique.
You're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Hey, it's our pleasure right now to welcome in Mark Ross of the NFL Network into our program and be a part of the Hive. Mark comes to us with a variety of experiences and knowledge. Ex-XFL Executive Vice President and Vice President of Player Evaluations. He's with the New York Giants, two-time Super Bowl champion, 20 years as a scout and scouting director, Eagles, Bills. He went to Princeton. He's smart, and that's why we like him to join our show. Mark, thanks for joining us. A lot of questions for you as it obviously relates to the Houston Texans. We look at this, and I keep saying one of the key things to look at for the Texans, no matter how they kind of have this Nick Caserio plan for the offseason, that they might be able to cash in by saving some money and getting some quality, might be these cap casualties that we keep seeing pop up on NFL Network and across the landscape with all the different crawls. What's your feeling on some of the players that might be out there that the Texans might be looking at and might be able to help themselves?
Well, you're always weighing that with your team, and I think with Houston, what kind of made not throwing them off, but they got so good so fast. I don't think anybody said, okay, well, last year we're picking second in the draft, and we're going to build for a few years. Well, actually, next year we might be playing in the AFC Championship game. So, you know, their timetable just got accelerated so instantly, and of course, you want that as a team, but when you're team building and Nick down there and D'Amico are saying, all right, well, maybe our game plan is changing from what we thought it would be because now we have a real shot at it. So, you know, they really just have to weigh the pros and cons of the players that are out there and not get desperate and just throw money around just because you think you're close, but still make those wise decisions of, you know what, we might have a long window here because we got a dude that could be a top five quarterback in the league, and let's still be smart and wise with building through the draft because we've shown we can hit on that big time and then supplement that with some quality, smart free agent signings.
Mark Ross, an NFL Network analyst, joining us here on the show. NFL Network provides free agent frenzy coverage next week, Monday through Wednesday, starting each day at 10 a.m. Central Time. Mark, you mentioned C.J. Stroud there at the end, and obviously he's got a couple really nice weapons with Tank Dell, the third-round breakout, Nico Collins, and obviously they just brought back Dalton Schultz on a three-year deal. But part of our conversation these last couple weeks about is, you know, how quickly do you try to add to that wide receiver room? Because we saw it last season when Tank Dell got hurt. There was a production problem there after Nico Collins, who also missed two games. When you look at the Texans' wide receiver room after Tank Dell and Nico Collins, how much of a need do you think that is, that third wide receiver? And where would that be in the list of their priorities this season when building the team through free agency in the draft?
Well, look, anything that you can do to help CJ as much as possible and support him as much as possible, you want to do that. Of course, he's shown how brilliant he can be on his own and raise the level of everybody else. That's really what he did jumping in there from day one, was raise everybody else's level. Yeah, you know, looking at you, Nico Collins, having a breakout year and, you know, the synergy he had with Tank. But, you know, that's always the concern. And, you know, that was the concern with Tank with a guy that small is the injury. So now it is, you know, that was one of the reasons why he got drafted where he did. But, okay, you know, will he continue to stay in, you know, will he continue to get injured? So, you know, for a smaller guy. So you're trying to do as much as possible for CJ to make it that he doesn't have to raise everybody else's level all the time, that, you know, they're supplementing what he does and making plays for him when called upon. So, yeah, you mentioned there are two number one, number two guys, and you say there's a three. Well, there could be another guy that comes in as the number one, you know, either throughout the draft or free agency if they look that route as well. So, yeah, I don't think just because Nico had a breakout year and Tank had a fantastic rookie season, I think they'll just go strong at that position to have as many playmakers as possible.
Mark, we were talking about the fact, and Mark Ross joins us from the NFL Network. We were talking about the fact that CBS Sports came out with a column recently that said that each team has one irreplaceable player, and they mentioned with the Texans it was John Grenard. And there's been a lot of discussion on this show about John Grenard and what is his ceiling for the team versus what he is seeking in the open market. And it seems like he's searching for $20 million a year on the open market, and it seems like Nick Caserio is obviously going to keep it close to the vest and be a little bit more careful in saying, you know, we're not going to do that. He had a breakout year last season. If Grenard does move on, you got a guy like Will Anderson who really kind of benefited from the fact that he had another pass rusher on the other side that people, old coordinators had to pay attention to. How replaceable is a guy like John Grenard, and how important is it to a guy like Will Anderson?
No, it's extreme. The more you got up there, the better it is for everybody. You know, with the Giants, when we won our Super Bowls, we got Strahan and Osi and Tuck and Jason Pierre-Paul and Matthias Kiwanuka and Linval Joseph. You know, it was just we brought waves of guys. And, of course, if you got only one dude, well, let's just focus on him, take him out. Well, now you got two or three. Of course, it makes it that much harder to block people. So, of course, if you had that duo last year and, okay, one doesn't make a play, here comes the other one, and, okay, let's throw some more guys in there. So, you know, I think it's unbelievably important where, you know, Grenard may be, I don't know, second best, third best DN on the market right now. Daniil Hunter's out there as well. You know, Christian Wilkins is inside. But just when you're kind of grouping those guys together and teams are looking, saying we can get this production on the open market, and teams always get desperate and maybe outbid Houston. And, of course, Grenard may say he wants to be there and all, but it's always going to come down to his agent and getting as much as he can for himself. So that's always the conundrum when you hit free agency, especially when you play well in your breakout year, is for Nick Cesario weighing what they've seen from him when he was there versus last year, and if that's worth it going forward, if they think he's still going to be that player, if he's going to get better, or if he'll decline. So, you know, only they know that and know the value of him, but other teams are valuing him as well with a number. And so if they do lose him, okay, where do we go now? That money we thought we had, we can put it elsewhere. Do we go through the draft, free agency? So those are always decisions and dominoes that fall with a guy like that.
Mark Ross joining us from the NFL Network. Again, NFL Network provides free agency frenzy coverage next week, Monday through Wednesday, starting each day at 10 a.m. Central. Mark, you mentioned a name there that's been rumored to maybe be interested in the Texans, and that is obviously ex-Dolphins defensive lineman Christian Wilkins. D'Amico Ryans talked in his end-of-season press conference about improving the defensive front being maybe his most important need and what he wants to do most during the offseason. So it seems like it could be a fit. Like, how do you see the fit of Christian Wilkins into what D'Amico Ryans would want to do? And obviously Wilkins isn't going to command Chris Jones money, I wouldn't expect. But what would you expect his or about his AAV to be on the open market?
Yeah, I don't want to put an exact number, but just with Wilkins, it's he fits anyone's scheme. You know, that gets kind of overblown. Like, can this player fit? Yeah, when you got somebody like Christian Wilkins, he's going to fit anybody's scheme. And D'Amico Ryans and the staff are looking at him like, yeah, we're going to make it work because he's that good of a player, whereas some other lesser talents, you got to maximize what they do within your scheme. But somebody like that would definitely improve the team, improve the front. You talked about Will Anderson, improve Will Anderson as well. And, you know, he's just that type of player on and off the field that you really want in your organization. D'Amico Ryans, former linebacker, knows those guys up front do the dirty work. You go clean up stuff. So it's you know, I love Christian Wilkins. I mean, just a fantastic player. I know Miami's sitting there right now like, man, how do we not get this done with this guy over these years? And, you know, of course, Chris Jones is a big fish. Seems like he's been around forever, but still relatively young. But yeah, that number he's going to go for, I don't think the Texans really want to go that high for a guy like that. So, you know, Wilkins could really be in the play because he provides the impact play, but also not the top of the end salary.
Mark, we also talk about running backs, and we know that the overall kind of perceived value of the running back financially has changed and shifted to where they're paying receivers and quarterbacks, and the running backs aren't getting what they used to get. But we know this is a pretty healthy market for running backs, and the Texans are trying to upgrade the running back position. When you look at some of these running backs, and we think the top tier obviously starts with Saquon and then kind of goes down from Jacobs and Henry and guys like that, do you see a couple of guys that might slide through the cracks and kind of fall back enough to where maybe the Texans are in a position to bring back Singletary at a decent rate? And then maybe for the price of top of the market like Saquon, maybe they could get Tony Pollard or Austin Eckler or guys like that.
Yeah, for sure. And I think, you know, the resurgence last year there with Devin, it was amazing. So, yeah, but he's not going to be your guy. Okay, now, unfortunately for running backs, with the starting off with the lack of high-end draft value. Saquon was the last one, and last year Bijan, but even Bijan jumped in there again. It was like, well, he wasn't the guy we thought he was going to be. So that value, I think, even in the draft is going to be a pushback. And now on the free agent market, all right, you got one guy. Now here's two. Now here's three. Now you got seven dudes who are high-end quality running backs who are all out there, which devalues them as well. Because if it was just one, you might have some teams kind of desperate. But since there's so many of them out there now, unfortunately for those guys, they're not going to get overpaid or paid really high. It's going to be sort of a, okay, we'll take the guy that we work out the best contract with. But, yeah, for Houston, that bodes well for them in that because they don't have to break the bank for any of those guys. There's a bunch out there like, okay, all these guys are quality players. We know they're quality players. We don't have to be desperate for that one guy who stands out above the rest. We don't need that person to come in here and be the guy if need be. He can, but I think that they're really at an advantage, or any team is at an advantage who needs a running back in this market.
Mark Ross from the NFL Network joining us here on the Killer Bees. Mark, I'm interested to get your opinion on this as someone who scouted, obviously, these guys and actually did this and was paid to do so compared to us guys, raging on Twitter and on sports radio. But when things happen at the NFL Combine, it feels like these arguments break out every year about, how much a bench press or a 40 time matters for the scouting process. But specifically, when you see not just a good time, but someone like Xavier Worthy, break the all-time record and run a 4.21. What does that do to the process of someone in your position? Does that make you go back and maybe look at the tape one more time, or does it just not matter at all in the overall evaluation of the player?
The combine definitely matters, and it's just a piece of the puzzle, X percentage of your pie, your puzzle that you have with the whole scouting process starting at camps for these guys, and their scouts are on the road all year looking at these guys, watching at tape, all-star games, now the combine, now pro days, interviews. So all of this goes in together. Each team has a different percentage of how all these different things matter. The best teams, the film matters 90-some percent, and then the other stuff supplements that. But what the combine does is, of course, when Xavier Worthy runs at 4.21, even though everybody knew he was fast, even though everybody knew he was going to blow it out, to do something like that, it definitely brings more attention to him, for better or for worse, because there's going to be more eyes on him from, let's say, your scouting staff or your coaches, particularly the coaches. Some of these coaches, it's their first time seeing these guys. They're really, so, of course, if you've got a coach sitting there, he's a wide receiver coach, and some dude runs 4.21, he hasn't watched any film, you're going to say, oh, I want that guy. Why didn't you? What's up with this guy? So you're going to watch him. But you don't want to make or break or overvalue or undervalue a player who doesn't run well. Let's say you think he plays fast. So it's all a part of that communication process amongst your scouting staff, but then also your scouting staff with your coaching staff, matching it up with the film to say, what I'm seeing on film, does it match up with what I saw at the combine? Or is there a huge difference of that? Oh, this guy plays slow. He ran super fast. Why is that? So you're just trying to match up the raw numbers with what you see on film, but also now the GPS is super important too, where every player has a GPS tracking unit on them when they're in games, when they're at the combine, to measure those real-time numbers as well, real-time speeds. And someone like, could run a slow 40 and have a fast GPS time when they're running the drill. So that's another component, another piece that has now added in that some teams actually look at the GPS numbers more so than the raw combine numbers and kind of downplay those. So all of those factors go into when you talk about a player.
Mark, real quick before we let you go on that point, though, because I understand people are trying to devalue the combine and it has this value. Is it fair to say that the biggest value that guys like you have when going to the combine might be the interview?
Yeah, that's it. But again, it's definitely a piece of the puzzle, especially the higher you're picking, where sometimes at the combine, you only have 15, 20 minutes, whatever. If you're really interested in a player and you're really trying to dig deep into who they are, the scouts all year long have done all of that. They've got all the background information, talked to so many people about it. The combine's your first time to kind of see where your brain trust sees them face-to-face. Then if you're really interested in them, especially if you're picking really high, you'll bring them into your facility. You'll go to their pro day. You'll take them out to dinner. You can definitely learn a lot in that environment. But then you also can answer more questions because you've still got so much time until the draft to dig into that guy's character and see how they are around other teammates, you know, other draft prospects and your staff.
Mark, we certainly appreciate it. Everybody check him out on Twitter, at Mark with a C, Mark Ross, NFL Network analyst, Mark Ross. Thanks again. We look forward to doing it again somewhere down the road.
Sure thing. My pleasure. Anytime.
There you go. Mark Ross of the NFL Network. Good get, BMAC. We're going to continue with a whole lot more. We're going to have our mock draft season continue coming off of Mark Ross. So we'll be able to get down and see what you guys think about some of that. And we'll continue to have a whole lot more. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 FM.
Live in the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees. Now back to Joel and Jeremy.
Jeremy out today doing his other job, the U of H Cougars.
What is Jeremy doing in Orlando? Wrong reasons only.
Ooh, good one,
B-Mac.
What is Jeremy doing in South Florida with a U of H game tonight? Wrong answers only, 713-780-3776. You can text us. You can call us if they're PG.
I can see him being at a poker table. I know Jeremy likes to play some cards.
Last year he did this.
Can't do that legally here.
He rented a convertible. I know that.
What is he, Guy Fieri?
And he went.
Is he rolling out for Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives?
He had a convertible. He went to a Rays game. He caught a foul ball.
I have seen the video of that.
Yeah, which was weird that he had the video, but okay.
Are you really that surprised that he has the video, though?
No. He's very thirsty for being a...
I mean, he's a social media influencer. He's got to get all the likes.
Brent, we're not going to let you be as converted to an over-the-top Jeremy lover as Joe was. Okay, so it's mock draft season, so we're going to get into this real quick. ESPN Plus and Jordan Reed has come out with a mock. He did two rounds. We'll only do one. But as we always do, you know the process. We're going to tell you who the Texans took, and then we're going to go with the next three picks after that
to
see just exactly which way you might go. Brian, you might be able to do the poll that he does.
Yeah, the poll is up right now on our ESPN 97.5 X page.
I don't really care for mock drafts that actually try to project trades because I don't think it's fair and I don't think it's accurate.
Yeah, then it throws everything kind of out of whack as far as like just player rankings.
This one has the Bears taking Caleb Williams at one. Drake May goes number two to the Commanders, whose stock has been a little shaky lately. Jaden Daniels, number three to the Patriots, and the run of three quarterbacks right off the top. Marvin Harrison Jr. to the Cards at four. And then this one projects the Bears move up and land a second top five pick at number five to take Malik Nabers, the wide receiver from LSU. That would be interesting.
Kind of copying the Texans there a little bit.
And Roma Dunze goes number six to the Giants. Interesting because I thought the Giants were going to be looking at the next quarterback of the future and looking to try and maybe trade down. Look at J.J. McCarthy and others.
If they stick there and Caleb, Drake, and Jaden goes in front of them, it would seem to make a lot of sense to trade down. You could draft Rome, but with the quarterbacks you have now in New York, I mean,
I gotta believe
he's a
Daniel
great talent,
Jones,
but you're not getting anything out of him with those quarterbacks.
I got to believe Daniel Jones is his last year.
It would have to be.
Would think that either they're going to groom one and let the guy sit this year, or they're going to realize they're probably going to be really bad, lose Saquon, not be as good anyway, their offensive line sucks, and then draft one next year. So one way or another, I could see that happening. Guys that the Texans might be interested, they got Denver taking Jared Verse at 12. Vegas takes Byron Murphy the second at 13. You and I both really saw that coming as a guy he was going to climb the charts.
That's something you still have to watch because obviously he's not getting to 23. But if he does slip, I'll say this. I think we talked about it last week. But if he slips to, let's say, 18, 19, I think Sarah needs to be on the phone and consider moving up from there.
All right, skip down to 23. The Texans via the Browns take edge rusher from UCLA, Leatu Latu.
Well done.
Thank you very much. He has had, I'm no Jeremy Branham, he has had neck issues. He's had some health concerns. But if healthy, this is a guy that a lot of NFL teams feel like we have not seen his best football yet and could really be a breakout star in the NFL. How would you feel, Brian, if the Texans turned in their card and Latu was their guy?
Yeah, I'd be fine with that. Like, it's not the... Like, when we started this process, he wasn't obviously the first pass rusher we talked about, maybe the first guy we fell in love with or, you know, our dream scenario. for an edge rusher that the Texans could get at 23, but it's the biggest need. I mean, it's the outside of quarterback to me. Pass rusher is the biggest need, and the Texans have a hole with Jonathan Gannard now entering free agency. So I trust D'Amico to identify good talent, and I like the position they're taking here. So I would be good if Latu's the pick.
So let's do the process as we normally do. And you said
First, would you be fine with Latu as well? Then?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, look, especially talking to all the guys that we've been talking to, and Mark Ross being the latest one. When you realize the fact that they're probably, I think they're going to lose Gannard. I think it's going to be the number one priority because of the fact that when we talk to people, the edge rushers are not as the draft is not as deep as it is for corners.
Yeah, you're not going to find one that could start at 59. Doesn't seem like.
So for me, you either start with the edge rusher and then look at corner and defensive line, or you get defensive line right away if you feel like there's a run and you can't get who you want. But you got to focus on the D-line first and then worry about corners and other things. So I'd be absolutely fine with the pick. But if we do the process, Dallas is the next pick. They go with tackle guard from Washington, Troy Fatano. Then from there, Green Bay takes Cooper DeJean. And if you even want to go one more for me, Chop Robinson goes to Tampa as another edge rusher. So if you had those guys to choose from, Brian right. McDonald, would you change the pick or would you stay with Latu?
I think I would change the pick. And it's not any slight on Latu, but I think I would prefer Chop Robinson as the pick, the edge rusher out of Penn State. So given these four options on the board, I mean, I don't hate any of them because it really checks off pretty much, you know, all of your needs except for running back and wide receiver. I'm talking about edge rusher, interior offensive line, and in the corner slash safety. So none of these picks to me like makes me mad. It makes me furious or has me start questioning what the Texans are doing. But one given does. The option of the four, I would go with Chop Robinson.
See, Fatano for me doesn't make any sense because I just don't want them to take another offensive lineman in the first round.
But a left guard is a need, though. You yeah. need a left
you don't,
guard.
You don't know that it is. It probably could be. There's a million different ways you can get one.
King and Green, though.
I just don't want to waste a first-round pick with how many holes you may have defensively.
Why
to
would
fill.
That be a wasted pick, though? If it's addressing a need, and because I don't. Maybe you feel differently about Kenyon Green, but I just don't feel like you can bank on getting anything from Kenyon Green, and your options after that really aren't all that attractive. So to me, if you get a great left guard, if they're right about this guy and they take him and he's their left guard of the future.
But Brian, you have two centers. One's capable playing guard in Juice. You have options. I would love to see, and I think Nick's going to give Kenyon Green every chance to succeed. But you have the opportunity, even when we start talking about guys that are going to be out there on the free agent market, if you need insurance, if you need a backup, if you need another guy, there are fully capable guys. And we saw Nick be able to do that really later than he was probably supposed to a year ago when Green went down. I just think that I'm assuming you're going to lose Stevie Nelson. I'm assuming you're going to lose Gannard. I'm assuming that you're going to have D'Amico's feelings on your brain as well, that he wants to improve the interior defensive line and stop the run. So that's why I keep saying I'm hell-bent and fast on saying first-round pick has to be focused on defense. With that being said, I also revert back to the Stingley draft, where if you have the choice between two guys that are similarly rated and you have one guy that doesn't have health issues, I'm going with that guy because that takes a little bit more worry off my plate when you're trying to hit the home run with your first-round pick. So for that reason alone, I'm going to skip Latu as well, and I'm going to agree with you. I'm going to take Chop Robinson. Chop Robinson's stock was going up during the combine. He tested well. He's very athletic. He's very fast. He has a lot of skill. That's the reason why I would not go offensive lineman, and I would go with the Chop Robinson over Latu.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying, and you're absolutely right on just value of the type of, I guess, you know, need that you're addressing in the first round. The value isn't offensive line. The value is corner, or more so it's edge rusher. But I just, like when you're talking about some of the names the Texans have there, the interior offensive line, I do like Juice Scruggs as a starting caliber center. I thought he showed well when he came back. I guess it was midseason last year after being a rookie out of Penn State. But I don't see the other names as being guys that I'd want to rely on as a starter. I mean, running game has to improve. I mean, D'Amico Ryan said that after the season, and it's not just the running back, it's the blocking in front of them. I don't see those other names as really being guys that I would really want to go forward with as difference makers at left guard. So if let's say there's a run on edge rusher, there's a run on corner, and you're sitting there at 23 with names at those two positions that don't meet the value to you where you're picking at 23, then I'd be open to addressing that need at left guard.
There you go. All right, let us know what you think. The poll is up on Twitter, so you can vote and let us know who you think the Texans should take on this latest mock draft. And we're at the halfway point, BMAC. This is flying by.
It's actually a dead even tie right now.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Latu and Chop Robinson both at 36.4%.
Okay, so at least they're leaning our way. They're leaning my way and leaning towards defense in the first round. We'll see how that plays out the rest of the way. You guys can vote on that. You can also let us know, wrong answers only, what is Jeremy doing today getting ready for U of H basketball in South Florida? There's some good ones here that we'll probably get to open up the next segment. Before we do any of that, we're going to take the halftime break, come back for the second half of the show. You guys stay with us as we've got plenty more to get to on the big program. Now that we've got the mock draft out of the way and mock draft season is done, we're going to have plenty more to get into, including Why the Face Wednesday, and BMAC's got a couple of things lined up for me and for you next on the Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5,
92.5
FM.
WTF, Why the Face.
Time to look back at some of the WTF moments from the past week. It's WTF Wednesday.
WTF to that.
With the Killer Bees.
All right, before we get to that, let's get to some of these because you guys are getting very creative on wrong answers only. Where's Jeremy and what is he doing in South Florida before the Cougars game tonight? Tony says Jeremy's in Florida competing in the ESPN, the Ocho's annual Dodgeball the Movie Imitation League. He signed up to be Gigi's team.
I could see Jeremy being very confident in his dodgeball skills.
He's confident just about anything.
That's where I'm going
overly
with it for sure.
Confident. Yes.
Yeah. 4965, Jeremy got accidentally arrested while Miami-Dade PD is wrangling in all of the chaotic spring breakers.
It's a good one. Kinger, who loves him some Jeremy on Twitch, said Jeremy's either arguing with himself in the shower or scanning Twitter for one compliment, just one.
This one's so mean I'm not going to read it from 0423. Jeremy's in Orlando for a rhinoplasty and leg lengthening surgery. I'm not going to read that one.
Yeah, definitely don't do that. Yeah, that would be a mistake if you ever read that one. Air Platinum, my boy, said, saw Jeremy outside Disney World panhandling as a poor man's Aladdin?
I don't even know what that means.
Don't know if they're saying if AR is saying he looks like him?
I'm not sure where that one's going. This is another Disney-themed one from 8863. Also, very, very mean to Jeremy. He apparently works part-time as a Mickey Mouse mascot, so he's there for work.
So either way, they've got him doing a lot of costume work in one of the costumes. Someone 1642 wants me to read this. I don't think we probably should. Did Robert Kraft get caught at the massage tables? I bet he's getting a happy ending.
Now what is that? Yeah, what was that?
Jeremy or Robert Kraft?
Yeah, I'm just trying to think of how Robert Kraft would have come up in the conversation.
I think because it was down in that area.
Okay. Yeah. You're right about that.
Well, there you go.
Here's another one that I think really gets Jeremy. So this is from 4624. Jeremy drove to see the Astros play. Well, bad luck on that. They got rained out. And to complain to Joe Espada about his lineup. In person.
What's wrong with Joe's lineup? And doesn't mean Joe George. It's a pretty good one. I'll take that one. And then we also got, did we get any more that I saw? I thought there was one more.
He's dressed like Aladdin taking pics for money like in Vegas or Hollywood. Maybe that's a follow-up as to what it meant about the Aladdin.
Oh, BMAC. This could actually be the award of the day. If Jeremy's smart, he's spending his downtime in his hotel room binging Barry on Deck episodes to try and figure out how to be a better co-host for Joel.
Now, why did you pick that out of all the texts to read?
Because I know that he likes to pick the mean texts on Friday that I can't stand. One may be in there.
All right, we got at least one more here. 2304 says he's also there for an annual quilt competition. He's over there competing against 80-year-old grandmas and grandpas. I think that should be illegal.
Wow, that's a pretty good one.
I bet Jeremy's pretty confident in his quilt making ability, too. You got any more?
Double Rod said he's cruising South Beach in his Daisy Dukes.
Now, see, no one wants to see that. That might be our sign. That might be our sign to move on.
Yeah,
no
Daisy Dips. Yes, Jeremy and Daisy Dukes. No.
No.
That would not be a good thing. All right, what do you got for the Why the Face Wednesday?
All right, so the first Why WTF Wednesday here. There was a man accused of, you're never going to guess, but I could give you 1,000 guesses as to what he dunked his head in. So, but a man was accused of dunking his head in a pickle jar and is being sought by police. A man in South Jersey is being sought by police after he was apparently the center of an apparent social media stunt. Just total 224 when we're talking social media stunts. And I don't know if this is a grocery store or a convenience store. I'm not sure where they
see,
would
now,
have
in the Midwest,
pickle jar.
The pickle jars are on the bar everywhere.
Okay.
Because
like
one,
at a convenience store or like a grocery store?
No, in the bars in the Midwest, they're on every bar because, one, you can buy the big dill pickle. Two, they say pickle juice helps to avoid a hangover.
Huh. Okay.
And three, it's the Midwest where they have a fondness for pickles. I have so many questions. How small is this guy's dome? And how big is this jar?
Yeah,
how
I mean,
is he fitting his melon in a pickle jar?
That is, I hadn't thought about that, but you're right. Either this is a massive jar, or he's got a teeny tiny head.
Yeah, or a combo platter that would I actually want to see on social media to see if I believe it. How are you fitting your dome in a pickle jar, no matter how big they are in Chicago on the bars? They ain't that big.
Yeah, well, maybe Google that after the show, because the police certainly do seem convinced it was a social media stunt. Good news, though, the store did remove the pickle jar for sanitary reasons, so you won't have to worry about eating any pickles that have had his hair or DNA all mixed into that pickle juice.
Good luck tracking them down, investigators, because I don't know that we need to tie up the court system, but that dude should probably be slapped on the wrist.
So I got one more for you. I have to read this, and I'm reading this mostly for the joke that I want to get to at the end, but it's just an absolute head-scratcher. One of the arguably horrifying things I've ever heard as far as bad teacher behavior, but there's a teenager suing a teacher who brought swords to class and instructed the kids, this is high school kids, to fight each other during class. So they're, according to a lawsuit, a 16-year-old sophomore at Albuquerque Public High School is alleging that a teacher brought two swords into the school, apparently hid them from students, security staff, and other school personnel until like a specific kid got into her class later in the day, which lends to the idea that maybe this is personal, although the article doesn't really go into it.
So the kid didn't file the suit because of the swords. The kid had a suit going, and that's why the swords were brought?
The kid filed the suit because of what we're about to read happened. So
okay.
The teacher brought in two swords, one of them like a long, like a samurai katana sword. Like, there's pictures in this article. I found it on FARC if you want to search it out. They're legit looking swords, so this is definitely some dangerous stuff. But apparently the teacher had told students that the swords were just props. So obviously the day goes on, and when this kid gets into the classroom, the teacher decides that, okay, this is the time to actually start pairing off students, arrange desks in a circle to create like a fight circle, and have the kids start fighting with these two swords that she brought into the classroom. The fights were timed. I mean, this was thought out, Joel. These fights were timed with a 2-minute timer displayed on the classroom projector, and it was filmed by other students, including footage that shows the teacher looking on approvingly while this is going on. So, as the team that's bringing the lawsuit actually gets called in to fight, it ends pretty quickly because she's struck in her right forearm and wrist by the katana-style sword, causing a quote, large and deep laceration. She began bleeding, and as if it couldn't get worse, the teacher, claiming she didn't know how to use the phone system, delayed getting help for the kid. 20 minutes went by before a kid went and got help. And 30 minutes went by before 911 was actually on the scene. Kid is okay. I just hope when they file this lawsuit, they better call Saul. They called Saul Goodman to run this case because it is in Albuquerque.
Okay. The big thing for me is, like, when did you start thinking that the common sense button should have been used in the fact that, one, it was a bad idea? Because you know that the minute the laceration happened, she's like, okay,
this isn't going to look good for me if I go to the authorities. Can I just, like, put a tourniquet on this thing and hope it goes away? What a dumbass.
Well, it's funny. I did skip. I forgot this part of it. I skipped over it as I was trying to get through it quickly. But the teacher, as soon as the kid does got caught, even though she delays calling 911, she immediately tells the students who are filming it and taking photos to, hey, put away your cameras, delete that. This is going to look really bad for me. Yeah, no duh. It's going to look really bad for you that you're letting teenagers in your classroom fight in a circle, timed rounds with katana swords.
Just a complete dumbass.
I mean, that's perfect for Albuquerque, isn't it?
Yeah, you stay in Albuquerque, but find a new profession.
And it's good that Alex Bregman got out of Albuquerque, because otherwise he might have had to fight with katana swords.
That's unbelievable. Some people are already texting in saying that in the Northeast, they sometimes have 5-gallon buckets that pickles come in. I don't care if it's a 5-gallon bucket. You're still sticking your whole dome in a pit. And normally that's not the big lid. It's normally a smaller opening. I have a hard time believing this dude's fitting his dome in a pickle jar or whatever size it is. That's crazy, man. We'll see what happens. All right, that's your Why the Face Wednesday for a Wednesday edition with Brian McDonald. Much more to get to on the show, and it always includes you. So we're going to get to much more coming up. Before we do that, I do want to tell you about my good friend Doc Linville and the NeoGraft procedure. Look, I've been telling you about him for a long time because I'm a believer, because I actually did the NeoGraft. I could not be happier with the results, and you guys have seen it from time to time when I have a meeting or whatever and I'm not wearing a hat. He got my hairline back. And if you're losing your hair, you have pattern baldness, you've lost your hair, you're thinning, you don't think there's anything you can do about it, you don't want to get into the sprays and the creams and the foams that just mask the problem. Simply put, you need to find out about the NeoGraft procedure, because it's a game changer and it's a life changer all at the same time. All you got to do is go to 975hair.com. There's a whole bunch of information there. You can sign up for a free consultation with Doc Linville and his staff. It normally costs $150. Because you listened to us and you went to 975hair.com, you get a consultation with Doc and his staff for free. And that's a huge bonus, because there's no signing on the dotted line, no money out of pocket, no commitment to be made, just you asking questions, them giving you answers, and you seeing if you're the next in line to get this great procedure. It's been absolutely fantastic. Literally, the procedure for me was painless. You see the follicles immediately, because as Doc explained to me in my consultation, genetically, you're never going to lose the hair on the sides and the back of your head. So he takes some of those follicles, puts them where you need them most. You start seeing the actual follicles immediately the next day. And from there, in the next 6 to 9 months, when they get stronger and longer, and because they're not going anywhere, you have more hair. It's absolutely fantastic. I think he's the best at it. Check him out today. Go to 975hair.com.
You're listening to the Killer Bees and some great music presented by RC Ranch,
the official beef jerky of the Houston Livestock Show and Rodeo.
Those sweet sounds are 1, 2, 3, 4. Let me see the Jelly Roll. Jelly Roll at the rodeo tonight. So we wanted to make sure we brought you some of the sweet sounds so that you might be able to take in if you get to the rodeo this evening. We continue to roll on the program. Brian McDonald and myself, Joel Blank, is Jeremy Branham is, well, they're still coming in, but there is bad takes only on where Jeremy is, what is he doing in South Florida before he does the Cougs game tonight. And I must compliment you people. You do this very well. There's been some good ones. But BMAC, you found this. CBS Power Rankings, they were ranking the best players in Major League Baseball, but they were just using the best player from each team.
Yeah, so 30 players overall. They picked the best player for each team and then power ranked them 1 through 30.
So Yordan finishes 6th behind Ronald Acuna Jr., Mookie Betts, Aaron Judge,
Julio Rodriguez,
yep. J-Rod, and is that right? Tatis Jr.?
Uh-huh. Fernando Tatis Jr.
They had Tatis Jr. at 5.
Yeah.
No Freddie Freeman, no Otani.
Well, the problem, Freeman can't be on here because, Acuna and Soto can't be on here because of Judge. So there are obviously some names that are left out that would normally be on here. Well, Trout could be on this list now because obviously Shohei is not on the actually, I'm not sure if he
is. Well, because the rest of the top 10 is Bryce Harper, Corey Seager, Gunnar Henderson. How is Gunnar the best player on the Orioles, by the way?
Would you have it, Rutschman?
Yes.
Yeah.
Allie Rutschman has done more.
Yeah. No, he certainly has. Gunnar was just the 1 year. I would agree with you on that. My biggest problem isn't that, but I certainly see your point there.
Like, this is the point that I brought up, and I know
it's good that Jeremy's not here for this because he always says that he hates and doesn't care and give a rip about any rankings and any of these kind of things. I do. And I really think that Yordan gets screwed in a lot of these deals. Maybe it's because there's still that lingering I hate the Astros thing. But Yordan, just the fact that he hits for power, he hits for average, he's so dominant. And obviously the biggest knock on him is just he needs to stay healthy. But if he stays healthy, how he's not one of the top five best players in baseball, I just don't know.
Yeah, that's the only thing I could see possibly is the reason why he falls to six is, like you said, some of the injuries that have prevented him from hitting his biggest statistical outcome at the end of a season. But I mean, he's got obviously a lot more pelts on the wall as far as postseason success than basically all of these guys. Acuna wasn't healthy when the Braves won the 2021 World Series. Betts has a World Series, but some of the knocks that you would put on Houston Astros players also apply to Mookie Betts. Then Judge, Julio Rodriguez, and Fernando Tatis have never been to the World Series, any of them. So, yeah, I don't know where you would put Yordan on this list. I have no problem with Acuna being first. But I think there's an argument specifically to this list because you're eliminating names like Freddie Freeman and, other guys that are on the same team as another great player like Juan Soto, also not being left on off this list because Aaron Judge is on the list. But I would have no problem Yordan as high as two. I would rank him ahead of Betts, ahead of Judge, ahead of Julio, and definitely ahead of Fernando Tatis Jr.
The only thing you can really crap on him for is just availability and health, right? Because
maybe defense ability. I don't know if they factor that in.
But that's what I'm saying. Now weigh each of these players. You're right. I would agree with you. Ronald Acuna Jr. to me
is one.
And he's earned that, right? And now he's hurt. But at the same time, if you're just going by the Janet Jackson theory of what have you done for me lately, he is the National League MVP. He is
40-70, never been
fair enough.
Before.
Okay, Mookie Betts plays multiple positions. He's a hell of an athlete. But when you look at it, since he's gotten to the Dodgers, he hasn't come close to his MVP season. He's not putting up the same kind of power numbers. He's not putting up the same kind of average numbers. Now, thanks to his video guy returning to the Dodgers, he did have an uptick. And he is versatile. But if I look at Yordan, the biggest knock is Yordan doesn't play defense the way Mookie does. But offensively, I'd take Yordan all day, every day over Mookie Betts offensively.
Yeah, I would too. I do think Betts has started to rebound. He had a nice season last year. And maybe the defensive versatility is what put him ahead of Yordan Alvarez. But purely as a hitter, like if I'm a manager and I have to send one person up, bottom of the ninth with two runners on, I would rather send Yordan Alvarez to the plate than Mookie Betts. So that might not be how they came to this decision. Certainly defense plays in the favor of Mookie Betts. But I would
take Yordan. Let's be honest. The speed has returned to the video room, and that's why he can do what he does. Aaron Judge, to me, there's no comparison simply because if we're judging, and this list, if I assume...
Pun intended.
Right. But if I'm judging this based on the fact that they're looking at last season, Aaron Judge was hurt. He was hurt for a majority of the year.
Not only was he hurt, but when you look at these two guys and compare their postseason success, Yordan laps them.
No doubt. So there's plenty of different ways I could poke holes in that and say, you know what, Judge to me is not the player that Yordan Alvarez is, and I think Yordan deserves to be higher. Look, J-Rod's a different story. J-Rod's an unbelievable defensive outfielder. J-Rod does have pop. J-Rod can hit for average, too.
Steal bases.
He steals bases. He's a five-tool player. To me, I understand that he's in the conversation, but is he as dominant offensively, both power and average, than Yordan Alvarez? The answer is no. So do you take his defense and his base stealing, and does that trump for him the ability to hit for power and average?
That would be the only really argument to me that you can make. It's steals and defense. Does that make up for enough ground that Julio concedes to Yordan otherwise to put him ahead? I would say no for the same comparison or the same reason I gave for Yordan versus Betts. Like if I have to bring up one guy to get a hit in a big spot, it's going to be Yordan over Julio Rodriguez, as great as a defensive player as he is. And I guess the reason for Tatis, and it feels like it's kind of an old take because Tatis has obviously missed a lot of time over the last couple of years from suspension and injury, but Tatis has had a bigger home run season than Yordan has ever had. Like, he's gotten over 40, so I guess you could check that box in his favor, although I think Yordan has bigger home run upside. But really the only thing I would definitely put ahead or Tatis ahead of Yordan for would just be speed, because certainly he's going to steal way more bases than Yordan.
Yeah, my thing with Tatis Jr. is like, he was an infielder. Now he's an outfielder. You know, he bounces around too. I mean, I don't know that his defense has ever been great.
No, but, like if his defense was great at shortstop, they wouldn't move him to the outfield.
The big thing to me is Yordan's inability to play more than 144 games in a season is the main reason I would say he hasn't hit 40 bombs and done the kind of things that we always expect him to do. And let's also be honest in the fact that Dusty Baker is the kind of manager that likes to side on the side of over resting
sure.
players like Yordan Alvarez to make sure he's ready for those big moments in the playoffs. So it depends on who you play for and how they choose to play you as well too. But I think if Yordan plays 150, 155 games, I don't have any doubt thinking that Yordan's going to hit 40 bombs.
No, I don't either. And that's kind of where I wanted to go with this next. Because as you mentioned, Yordan's never reached the 40 home run plateau, but that's pretty much to me just because of the games missed. Like his highest games played in the season, as you mentioned, was 144 games in 2021. So he's never even reached 150. And that's certainly, I think, been the biggest reason why he hasn't got to 40, with his biggest home run season being 37 home runs. But if he stays healthy, I'm curious what you think, like, is his max upside, like, statistical output? Because when you look at his best, like, 162-game pace, and obviously he's not going to play 162, but his best 162-game pace came in 2022, when if he'd played that amount, he would have had 44 home runs, 116 RBI. Do you view that as, like, his max upside, or does he have another level even beyond that to you?
See, I think there's a season where he could hit 50.
I agree.
And I'm not assuming he plays all 162, but the fact that if we just say, hey, he gets his periodic day off of rest here and there, say he misses 10 games, and say he plays 152 of the 162, I firmly believe that there's a season in there where he could hit 50 bombs and drive in 120-plus. I just believe that he's that kind of talent. And so that's why, I thought you were going to do what you normally do, which is like you start really diving down on all these numbers and suddenly he becomes like the natural.
No. I tried to avoid overdoing it with the stats.
Yeah, I honestly think that his ceiling, we don't know, but I'd say if he could, there's a season in there where he could hit 50 bombs and drive in 120 plus.
I think this season specifically, now obviously it would hurt his RBI number hitting second, right. But specifically with this home run total, now, because obviously the bulk of last season, he had Jose Abreu behind him. Now, if he stays in the second spot doing what they're doing, you have Alex Brehm and Kyle Tucker as the next two guys behind you. Not that anyone's going to give Yordan something to hit, but certainly I think that helps possibly seeing maybe a few more pitches over the season, or maybe at least being less willing to just completely pitch around him and basically intentionally walk him because there's better hitters coming up behind Yordan than last year.
This is the year for him. I just firmly believe it. That's why I think he's going to be in the MVP conversation. I believe this is the best lineup that he will ever hit in because of the guys around him. We don't know what's going to happen with Bregman after this season, so we don't know what kind of lineups he's going to hit in after this year. But I think this year, with this lineup, as long as he stays healthy, this could be a monster year for Yordan Alvarez.
Yeah, no, I'm in absolute agreement. We could look back to me in 5 years and say 2024 was the career year.
Yeah, no doubt about it. All right, so we've got lots coming up with 1 hour to go in the show, two in the books, one to go. And we'll start out the final hour of the show sticking with Astros and asking you, what concern do you have with the Astros rotation until Justin Verlander returns? We're going to ask you to get involved in the conversation. Let us know. 713-780-3776. You can hit us up on Twitch. You can hit us up on Twitter. You can text and call the show. It's at Sacked by BMAC and at Pac-Man Joel with a K. Final hour of the show in 60 minutes on the clock when we return. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 FM.